Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Alex Carpenter, and in this week's episode, I talk with Brandon Warman. He's one of the guys behind the Precision Coffee Grinder Hand Ground. You probably heard about this grinder from their successful Kickstarter campaign that raised over $308,000. We talk a little bit about how they use crowdsourcing to pretty much develop and come up with the ideas and manufacture this whole process for this hand grinder. And it was a lot of fun talking with Brandon, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for listening. What's up, Brandon? How's it going?
Hey, Alex. I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for taking the time. I know, like, we talked a little bit beforehand, but it sounds like you've had a busy past couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a busy past few weeks since the launch of the Kickstarter campaign. Dan and I have been on the road every single day until yesterday. So today is the first day that we're back in Santa Barbara, where we are located.
Nice, get a little bit of relaxation before you get back into all the swing of things again.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. We'll be in the garage working, but.
Yeah. Awesome. For the listeners out there, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. So, again, my name is Brandon, and Daniel Vitello and I launched the Hand Ground Kickstarter for the grinder earlier in February. Daniel and I personally don't have the background in coffee that most people do. When we talk to other people in coffee, a lot of people started as a barista, or in a roasting facility, or as a buyer, or maybe their parents are really involved in coffee. Daniel and I actually have our backgrounds in sustainable consulting. Before we launched Hand Ground or got into the project, we both had started a company with a third friend of ours in sustainability consulting for back-end supply chain management for companies that supply to companies like Walmart. And it was through sustainable management that we actually we found our niche in agriculture, and then we got introduced to coffee. And that, in conjunction with our third roommate, who was already obsessed with coffee, who was teaching us all the ways to brew our coffee, it really got us interested in coffee. And that was last year. And when we do a deep dive into something, we go real deep. And so it wasn't long before we went down the coffee rabbit hole.
Very cool. What did your process look like at that time, brewing coffee wise?
We were brewing pour over coffee out of a silicone dripper to start. we like to backpack. We like to hike, and our third roommate, who really got us into coffee at the time, his name is Nick. That's how he first introduced us to coffee, and we had a blade grinder. A Mr. Coffee grinder. We had the silicone drip, our filters. We got a French press, and then we started buying everything as we sort of went on this search to find brew the best cup of coffee at home.
Mm-hmm. So what you said you were working with like a Mr. Blade grinder or whatever. Like, was that just like, all right, we see a huge void in this market right here that we need to make a better hand grinder. Like, how did that whole process start for you guys?
Yeah. So it was after the blade grinder that we really realized there was an opportunity in the market. I guess to take a step back a moment, we our company previously was called Kaizen Sustainability, and we decided to live our lives through the Kaizen principle, which it's a Japanese term for continuous improvement. It's been used in a lot of really big companies around the world, Toyota specifically. It's just a mission that a lot of companies adhere to, and it's continuous improvement in any way you can. And we decided that that's how we wanted to live our lives every day, not just our business, and we wanted to improve everything that we did. If we were going to, let's say, work out, what's the best, most efficient way we can work out, without straining ourselves and spending hours on it? And what's the most effective way to answer emails? And then, we really love coffee. So what was the best way, the, and and also the most affordable way to make the best cup of coffee at home. And when we decided to tackle coffee, which is our morning ritual every day, so big for us, the first thing that it was clear to us was that we needed a better grinder. You can choose a lot of different brew methods. I mean, there are so many variables that go into making a good cup of coffee, but after you buy your beans, the next step, if you aren't grinding your coffee the right way, everything else after that is just null. It doesn't matter. So we went out, we bought a hand grinder. The first one we bought was the Hario Skirton, because that was, one of the most affordable hand grinders out there. It had really good ratings on Amazon, and we like to do a lot of online research and analytics, and it seemed like the Hario, with its reviews for the price level, was the right one to start off with. And we bought that, and then it didn't take long for us to realize how much could be improved with that grinder.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of buying the burr grinder was to get a consistent grind, and immediately the one thing that's wrong with that grinder is that the axle is held at one point, which allows the axle to wobble while you grind it. In fact, when you just push down the handle, the axle leans to the side, and you'll get fine grinds on one side and really coarse grinds on the other, in the gap between the burrs. And we noticed that and said, well, we can't get a consistent grind with this. We looked into it, and we could have bought an attachment to fix that on there, but we thought, why isn't there something available that, why haven't they fixed this in their design? And we went further into the research, and we looked into other grinders, and we bought other grinders. The next step, in terms of price level, there's the Porlex, and then we discovered the Lido, and we were in love with the Lido at first, but it was just a little pricey for us, and we thought, we could fix a few things in these cheaper hand grinders, and just make it have such a better grind, but still offer it at an affordable price. And that's sort of where we started. And I don't think we would have ever expected it to end up where it is now. At first, we were just thinking we would alter our own hand grinder. And then if it ended up being an easy fix, that we could sell it on Amazon. but it was when we started involving the coffee community that we realized there was really an opportunity to involve everyone in the process and make something that everyone wanted.
Yeah, let's explain that a little bit. You guys did a kind of a unique way of, I guess you'd say, like crowdsource work to help make decisions about the design and the mechanics behind the whole the grinder. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when we first started reaching out to the people that we knew in the coffee community, we realized that as much research as we had done, there are some things that just aren't written out there that you need to talk to people to get the advice of. And it's also much more efficient to pick up the phone and call someone or meet them in person than to try to find it online, especially when you don't know what you don't know and you're not searching for it. So one of the first things we did was actually we designed a survey based on, and this was before we even had a design for the grinder or anything. We just thought, let's see if we can come up with a name for the grinder, for the company. And we designed a survey that was based on some marketing research that we had done on memorability and whether or not it was easy to write down. And the first thing we did to gather a group of people to answer the survey for us was we went to a resource called Amazon Mechanical Turk. And I don't know if you're familiar with Amazon Mechanical Turk, but it is basically a resource where there are people out there that have free time either during their day at work or afterwards that can sit down on the computer, log into their Amazon Turk profile, and do a few tasks online. And the tasks can range, from one thing. They can be a lot of different things, but usually it's something that a business person like you or I, or not a business person, but anyone working on a project doesn't want to spend the time on, that anyone can really do. So, for instance, if I am trying to find the emails of, let's say, a bunch of friends that I have on Facebook, or to find, or I have a list of names and I want to see if I have any connections to them on Facebook. You can go to Amazon Mechanical Turk and say, okay, here's a name. Can you check this person in my Facebook profile and see if they have, if I have a connection with them? And then they would say yes or no. And then you can say, if yes, what is their email? And that could be one task for a Mechanical Turk. So we went on to Mechanical Turk and we approached it a little bit differently. And our, the title of our task was, do you love coffee? And that was it. And if they clicked on it, then all it prompted them to do was answer a few questions. And that's how we actually gathered our initial list, our initial team hand ground in the beginning, which consisted of maybe 100 Amazon Mechanical Turks. And with that list, we sent them the first questionnaire on names of companies, and which turned out to be so valuable to us because we wanted to name our company Kaizen, which is the same name as our sustainability company. And the results on the survey couldn't have been more clear to us that it was probably the worst possible name to choose for starting a company in coffee. And, you know, we asked things like, what word associations come to mind when you hear this word? And, you know, so when it came to Kaizen, they had a lot of German associations, and people said it made them think of Hitler and things like that. And we're like, okay, no, we do not want this. And, it was also one of the hardest things to remember to say. So the first thing we did was say, press play right here, listen to what's said and write it down. So they pressed play and it said Kaizen. And then they would have to write it down. And you know, 30% of people or less could actually write it down correctly. And that's important when you're coming up with a name for a company, because if your friend says, hey, check out Kaizen, they have this great new hand grinder. And you say, sure, sure. And you go home hours later. One, if it's a word that you can't recognize and it's hard to remember, you're not even going to remember what to write down on your computer, what to search for. And if you do remember it's Kaizen, you can't spell it, it might not even find it. And your attention might get diverted and you might never end up finding out about it. So,
how do you spell Kaizen?
Kaizen is K-A-I-Z-E-N.
All right, yeah, I would have been off.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's actually how we came up with HandGround to start it, and that's that was just an indicator to us that this is what we needed to do for the whole process. We needed to involve everyone. We needed to ask the people that really know coffee what their needs and desires are and how we should approach it. And we will just be the facilitators of what everyone wants.
Awesome. I know, I watched the video you guys have on your Kickstarter, and it kind of explains this a little bit, but what were some of those things that people were asking about that they felt were missing in the hand grinder that you guys collected?
Oh, yes. Oh, I love those videos, by the way, that everyone submitted. When we asked people to submit videos of themselves, asking, you know, what are your top grinder frustrations today, we were absolutely surprised with the results. We did that just to say, you know what, like, let's just try it. Like, I doubt anyone will actually send a video of themselves. And lo and behold, we had, you know, I had over 50 people submit videos, and that was incredible in itself. But the top grinder frustrations that people had were, you know, one which I addressed earlier was the wobbly burr, the axle that's held at one point. On the cheaper hand grinders, you don't get that. And that can be easily fixed by having a second touch point on the axle to keep it sturdy. Another one was that it's awkward to use hand grinders. You know, almost all hand grinders today have a handle that's on top of the grinder. And to spin that around, and I'm sure everyone listening to this knows what these hand grinders look like, but when you spin it around, it's an awkward motion for your hand and your arm, and it can really get tiring. And it doesn't use the muscles that your body is not necessarily meant to use, but it's using the muscles that are less used, so the weaker muscles in your arm, so you get tired faster. And so, you know, we offered the idea of doing a side-mounted handle, and there was some skepticism there of whether you could actually do it, but we said, you know, if we could do it, and, you know, we're not rocket scientists, but I think we can do this, then would you like that? And everyone said, you know, it was unanimous. Yes, of course. It's this motion of going up and down with your arm. You're using your biceps and your triceps. And it's like, if you can imagine the equivalent of a fishing reel, there's no fishing reels with the reel that's on the top, you're spinning it around. I'm doing the motion right now, so I'm shaking. But all the fishing reels out there have, the reel on the side, because that's just easier to do for your arm. So that was another problem that we wanted to address. And then one of the other major problems, and there's probably a list of 10, but I'll cut it to the most important ones. And the last one was the adjustment process. Most people are using multiple different brewing methods, and they want the flexibility to change their coarseness level. And most grinders do have that, but they're difficult to use. And I mean, I can go into example on the Hario where you have to unscrew the nut on the top, take the handle off, then take a locking mechanism off, and then screw the washer around. And not only that, there's really no point of reference for where your grind is. So, what we noticed immediately was I would kind of test a few pour overs when we first got the Hario, and I would get this grind that was just great. I'd have a cup of coffee, at that point in time, probably one of the best cup of coffees I had ever had at home, not in the shops. But and then Daniel would come in and unscrew it and grind for a French press at a coarser grind. I come back later in the day saying, I'm going to make that other perfect cup of pour over once again, and the grind was off. The adjustment process had been changed from Daniel, and I could never get back to that perfect grind again. So that was another thing that we wanted to address with our grinder.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things. Like at home, me and my wife are big. We've had a electric grinder for a period of time, and that shut down on us. So we kind of went back to using the Hario skirt and grinder as our main coffee grinder for the past probably year now. And that is probably one of the biggest frustrations about the device, is not being able to change the different grind settings. You know, we have Chemex that we use. We have a bunch of different brewing methods that we like to use. And we do like to, obviously change the grind size to account for what device you're using. And it's just gotten to a point where we just sometimes, as bad as it sounds, out of convenience, we do just leave it at a certain point and just go with what we got,
Yep.
But, seeing the way that yours works, that is very intriguing and probably one of the biggest selling points, I would say, for the device itself.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, and we wanted to make it as simple as possible. So, with our design that it took us a little while to get to, especially by fit it all into the width of that grinder, which was determined by our crowd, the width, the height, every measurement. I mean, we had a survey that went out to Team Handground that said, well, we can have the handle this long, but our designer realized that with the largest type of hand that we'll be using this, and he took the size of Shaquille O'Neal's hand and said, if he was holding on to our grinder, he would have 4 more millimeters of space, or he would have, well, it was actually more like 10 millimeters of space between his hand and the countertop, so we can probably move the handle, make it longer by 4 millimeters, and therefore have more leverage on the handle as you're spinning around. Should we do that? And so we asked that. We're like, well, I think so, but let's ask the audience. And again, the answer is yes. And those are the types of decisions that everyone helped us out on. So, it's really cool. I don't think we could have come to the design that we have without the team.
Yeah, for sure. And, going into a little bit more about the grinder, what was the idea behind like the materials used? Can you go into some specifics about that?
Yeah. So we started off thinking it would be fully made out of plastic. And then when we, I should take a step back and say how we ended up running into Joaquin, who is our industrial designer. And I'll go through it super quickly so we can, we're not sitting here for an hour, but
that's all right.
We basically came up with a design for our grinder that we thought was, Daniel and I thought was great. And we're gonna have to post this online one day, the picture of it. But we decided, our team Handground decided that the handle was just awkward looking. The knob looked like a hammerhead, they said. They didn't like it. So we held a 99 designs competition to get a design for the handle, just the handle. And for anyone not familiar with 99 designs, it's a crowdsourcing community for designers to be able to submit their designs to a competition, whereas if their submission is chosen, they get paid for it. And maybe I didn't explain that very well, but usually it's typically used for logos, t-shirt designs, website designs. So you can go in and say, hey, I'm a new coffee roaster, and this is the name of my company, and I want to design a t-shirt around that. People can then submit, oh, and you would say, I'll pay $400 to someone who submits a design that I like. And maybe 5, maybe 100 people can submit, will submit a t-shirt design, and you choose the best one, and they get paid. And it's a great way to do smaller tasks. I wouldn't say it's where you'd want to go to find an immaculate designer or try to find a designer for your whole project. It's really for the simple tasks, because the great designers out there don't want to work on a project that they're not necessarily going to get paid for. Mm-hmm. But we went on there and wanted to see if anyone would come up with a design for just our handle and knob. And I know I'm going way into depth on this, but we had over 87 submissions. I think it was 87 or 86, somewhere up there. And Joaquin, we had a lot of really good submissions, and a lot of people ended up changing the entire design of the grinder. And we got some really good ideas. And there was one that came in that was just, it was beautiful. I just remember sitting there on the computer at 1 a.m. with Dan and looking at the computer, and we're just both sitting back looking at this design saying, yeah, that's it. And the guy's name was Joaquin, and he was a designer from Buenos Aires, Argentina. He ended up being the winner. We talked to him afterwards, and he said that, he had worked on other coffee projects before for larger companies with brewing devices, and he would love to stay on and help us. And he's been on with us ever since, and he's been an extremely valuable asset to this team. But back to the question that you had asked, which was if you could remind me, what was it?
Just like kind of the idea behind some of the materials used in the hand grinder.
Right. So the reason I went back in that whole story was because his design was metal, and that's why we ended up having a metal design. But for the material choice overall for the grinder, we're actually on it, making a decision right now. And right now the internal components of the grinder are designed to be made out of ABS plastic, which is a really high strength plastic. And the metal version of the grinder will be electroplated, meaning that it will actually be stuck in a tank with electrodes on the other side, and it's this process where there's metal in the bath, and it will attach itself to the grinder and create a layer of actual metal over the grinder, over the plastic, creating a surface that is in fact metal, but it's just very thin over the metal. And a lot of appliances in the kitchenware industry today are electroplated in this fashion. I can name a bunch, but I won't go into it. But, for example, sink faucets look metal. A lot of them, look metal or brass. But if you broke them in half, they'd actually be, you'd see that they're made of plastic in the inside. But the electroplating process increases the strength of the plastic significantly, so that it is almost, strong like metal itself. But there has been a lot of interest on our Kickstarter to create a full metal version, a die-cast version, where the external components are all metal through and through. And we think that if the process is not too expensive, we would love for it to be fully metal. And I think everyone would too. It would make the grinder heavier, but because of the size of the grinder, it's not necessarily your backpacker's grinder. It's more of your kitchen grinder. And it's okay if it's heavier. And, the heavier a product is, it's got a more, it's just the perceived value of a product goes up as it gets heavier. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we're at right now. We're talking with the manufacturer, and we're figuring out if the cost will not go up too significantly. Because one of our major goals with this grinder was to create the highest quality hand grinder that we could at an affordable price. And, if we start adding too much complexity that's not needed to create a consistent grind, and the cost goes way up, then we're not in the market that we plan to be in anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the external components being metal versus plastic, the burrs we're using right now are 38 millimeter ceramic burrs. And you know, we found a really good ceramic burr manufacturer. It's high quality ceramic, high strength, durable. It'll be sharp for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also had a lot of interest in steel burrs, and we are still looking into whether or not we can have the design suitable for both a 38 millimeter steel burr and a ceramic burr, and then the user can choose which burr they want. And maybe the ceramic comes as the stock burr, and you can buy the steel burr online. These are all decisions that still have to be made, but you know, they're up in the air, and it's all because of what, you know, we've asked Team Handground and what they've expressed interest in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I really do love the look of it. Is it the silver version? Is it like your main version, you would say, based off of what you have on Kickstarter? I see you guys have a bronze one too. That looks pretty nice too.
Yeah, the copper one's been very, very much more popular than we anticipated on Kickstarter, but those are things you can't foresee. And that's a good upside, good surprise. You know, creating a copper version is going to cost a lot more, but it seems that it's going to be well worth it. People really want that copper version, and we're only offering it on Kickstarter, where it's a one-time thing. So I think that's also what creates the demand. There's, you know, people will like to say that they've got the only copper hand ground grinder.
Yeah, for sure. That thing is gorgeous. I would love to have the copper version of that. We talked to a guy not too long ago. He runs a company called Monarch Methods that creates copper pour-over kettles, which are equally as beautiful, too.
Yes, yes, those things are beautiful, and it would be awesome to have a fully copper brew set in the house.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what is how long until you guys are have these in production, do you say? I know you still got maybe a few days left on the Kickstarter to go, but when can people start seeing these and possibly even be able to purchase one?
Yeah, we've got 56 hours left to go in the Kickstarter campaign, and once it's over, the payment processing cycle for Kickstarter takes up to 2 weeks. So after 2 weeks, we should have the funds to be able to pay our manufacturers to go into the manufacturing process. Now, we're already working with them right now with the expectation that they will get paid because they can see the Kickstarter campaign and that it has been successful. And
very right now, highly successful, if I may add.
Thank you. So they're confident that they will get paid, and they currently are working with our design right now just to make sure that it is ready for manufacturing. So it's called design for manufacturing. You know, there's little things that you might not be aware of when you're designing something that, you know, you can be aware of whether or not the piece will be moldable out of, you know, either a die-cast mold or a plastic injection mold. But there's small things that you know, people like Daniel and I and Joaquin are going to miss, whether it's, you know, the thickness of a wall to a certain micron level or having certain angles on the walls that are easier to mold with than others. So they're just going through that right now, making sure everything is set. And then once we get the funding in through Kickstarter, they can start with to make one more prototype in sort of a batch of prototypes and different materials so we can test them all out. Because right now we're working with only three prototypes. And then they will build the molds. And the mold process typically takes 45 to 60 days. It can take less, but hopefully a month and a half is where it'll be. That's what we've estimated. And once the molds are done, Daniel and I plan to actually travel to China where our manufacturing plant is. That's building the molds and test out the first run off the production line. Now, in manufacturing, there inevitably will be something that goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. I've never heard of anyone that's had a perfect process where there's never been a problem, but if they have, then that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And they should hold on to that. But there will probably be, you know, small errors here or there. I mean, it could be anything as tiny as there's a dent in the machine. I don't know. It could be anything. And mm-hmm. so we're going to go and evaluate that, test the grind, and then hopefully they can make the changes that we will need within a few weeks after that. And that will be, I didn't give a time frame, that will be mid-April when they're done with that. And then the process after that for fixing any changes, you know, that could be zero, that could be 60 days. So hopefully the process will be done, you know, May or June, and then we'll be going into full production. We'll be shipping to everyone to their doorstep by August.
Very cool. And once the Kickstarter orders are fulfilled and such, do you guys have like an idea of what the price of one of these grinders might be costing?
Yeah, so on Kickstarter, the plastic version is $55, and the nickel metal plated version is $75. And obviously, you offer your products at a discount on Kickstarter. When we go retail, we have estimates, and it's hard to give a definitive mm-hmm. decision on that, but we're estimating that the plastic will be around $80 retail and that the metal will be around $100 retail.
All right, gotcha.
And we're hoping the cost goes down. But, you know, to start off, price will go down over time. I don't foresee that, but that's what we're estimating right now.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it's a great price for something like this. And we had a Twitter follower just ask us something, and he was curious about, like, if since you went into such detail about hand grinders and all the other ones that are out on the market, what one would you suggest if somebody wasn't able to get their hands on one of your grinders?
Oh, what other grinder would I suggest?
Yeah.
Oh, I think the answer is always it depends. if someone has the money to spend on a grinder, more money than what the hand ground grinder will cost, I think the Lido 2 is a great grinder. Personally, it's a little larger than I'd want, but it's got the functionality of a great hand grinder to create a consistent grind, but it is pricey.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a traveler and you don't want to spend as much as $175 or anywhere in that range, I think the Porlex is a great option. They've got a really good ceramic burr set. They have a little bit less problem with the wobbly burrs. It's nice and metal, and it's great for traveling. So the Porlex grinder has my vote there.
For sure. Thank you for answering that. And yeah, thanks again for joining us on the show and telling us all about the grinder. And want to congratulate you and your business partner on creating an awesome product, and hopefully I can't wait to see it out in the market for everybody. And this definitely is something I know, like, along the Akaya scale, it's just something that new to the coffee industry that shakes it up a little bit. And I love that it's you guys are making it accessible to people by having a lower price but still creating such a quality product. I think that's going to be a game changer for sure.
Yes, that's the goal. So thank you so much for having me on the show, Alex. I really appreciate it.
For sure. And look forward to hearing about it in the future. And I hope you have a good time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.